today on Doomed! How Facebook failed to stop the steal, according to Facebook. Today on the show, we'll discuss an internal report from Facebook that lays out how the social media company failed to stop the steal movement, which of course ended up leading to the pro-Trump mob storming the Capitol on January 6th. Folks, to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/MattBinder, subscribe at youtube.com/MattBinder, twitch.tv/MattBinder, find this show anywhere on social media just by searching Matt Binder, and it'll be there. And also, to catch the show afterwards as a podcast, just go to doomedpod.com or doomedcast.com. And without any further ado, let me introduce to you my guest for today, who will be talking with us about this internal report that he wrote about. Let me pull this up on the screen just one second. Here we go. Joining me now is Ryan Mack, senior technology reporter at BuzzFeed News. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Ryan, well, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the show as the first ever guest for this new setup I have with this new computer. So, you know, you get to experience all the technical difficulties, which surprisingly, usually there are, and surprisingly there's not today. But anyway, Ryan, thank you for joining me today to talk about this. So first of all, I wanted to quickly talk to you about something else that has to do with Facebook. They just broke yesterday, and it is related to this in terms of Facebook seemingly having failed once again to deal with current events and political news. They hid or banned a hashtag search, an anti-Modi hashtag search in India on their platform. What happened there?
Yeah, so they hid this hashtag, hashtag resign Modi. And so the context for this, of course, is that India is going through a massive public health crisis with COVID. Thousands are getting sick, thousands are dying, and people are unhappy with their leadership in the country. And so there are a lot of people that are speaking out on social media, as people do. And there was this hashtag, resign Modi, on Facebook. And for whatever reason, it started being hid by Facebook for a couple hours yesterday. Some people started to notice that when you search resign Modi on the Facebook search bar, it would populate with this message that said this hashtag has content that's blocked for whatever reason. I forgot the exact reason. So we wrote that up. And the reason that Facebook gave was that it was a mistake. They quickly re-enabled it after people reached out to them about it, but it still took a couple hours. So you got this case of whether it was a mistake or not, Facebook blocking political speech in this country that's experiencing a public health crisis. And that was a really kind of ugly look. And this comes after Facebook already removed content over the weekend, or I think last week, that was critical of Modi and the Modi government, at the request of the government, because there's a law there that says that they can request for material to be taken down.
Right. So let's get to this report now that we spoke about this. You know, I think it is interesting to see just basically how, you know, we obviously have an issue with a lot of these social media platforms here in this country, but elsewhere, it seems like they're not dealing with the platforms aren't being, you know, those countries aren't being treated any better by the platforms. In fact, in many cases, they're treated even worse.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. is argued. I mean, it's the most important market for Facebook. It's where the company's located. It's their home base. And I think for a lot of U.S. Users, people may only pay attention to what happens in this country. And it's arguably very bad, like already. And so you take that and you apply that to other countries where they may not have offices or moderators in certain languages, or just the willingness to deal with issues in those countries. Myanmar, for example, comes up a lot, and how the company handled issues in that country. And so, there is a lot to be, I guess, desired for Facebook's work overseas. And we've reported on that as well. We've done stories on internal memos about that. For example, this summer, there was one pointing out the issues in kind of smaller countries that Facebook kind of turns a blind eye to.
Right. Less press on there. So, you know, if they lack in that area, they don't have as much to lose as they do if they screw up with something in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But even with that being said, here we have this internal report where they basically found all the ways that they failed to deal with an issue right here in the United States. Can you break down what this report looked at and what it found?
Sure. Yeah, we wrote up a story initially last week on this internal report. And this is actually a pretty comprehensive and like detailed internal report. Like, Facebook has a lot of people looking at and a lot of smart people looking at like issues within the company or issues that they could do better on. And so this report was from this task force that was meant to kind of analyze what happened following the insurrection, what was on the company's platform that led to kind of the unrest. And this came in after, if you remember, these comments from Sheryl Sandberg back in right after the insurrection that most of the stuff was organized on other platforms. It didn't happen on Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg testified actually last month in front of Congress saying that the company had made their services kind of inhospitable to people trying to sow discord just after the election. And so this report actually kind of pours a lot of cold water on that and shows that Facebook actually did miss a lot of the kind of coordinated behavior that went into organizing something like Stop the Steal and this other thing called Patriot Party. And it kind of analyzes what they missed, the signals they missed, the policies they didn't have in place in this very kind of comprehensive way that most people don't get to see within Facebook. And so we wrote that up and put this out to the public so that the people could see it.
Right. Now, obviously, I'm not asking for your source, but how did you guys, get this material? Did someone from inside Facebook basically share this, or what happened with how this got out there?
Yeah. I'll just say that we've reported a lot on Facebook over the last year, and we've gotten a lot of internal documents. And so this was just the kind of in the line of that reporting, getting documents from within the company, because these things aren't going to make their way to the public. The interesting thing about this report is that it was shared pretty widely internally. And so its authors likely had the intent that they wanted to get this in front of as many people as possible. And it was seen pretty widely. But in terms of the public seeing this, I mean, I think without us kind of doing this, there'd be no way that this would see the light of day.
Right. Like I said, not to be like, Ryan, tell me your sources. Let's blow it to the cover. I'm asking because I think we're seeing something here where there's a lot of people who work at Facebook who aren't quite thrilled with how, you know, the company they work for, you know, the role they've played in certain, you know, issues around the world, especially when it comes to politics.
Well, you have more than 50,000 people that work for Facebook worldwide now, probably a lot more. I have to check the exact number now. They had earnings yesterday. But yeah, I mean, we have kind of mined Facebook for this type of reporting. I mean, just last summer when there was a lot of civil unrest, a lot of people were unhappy with how the company dealt with the Trump looting and shooting posts, if you remember that, during the George Floyd protests.
Right.
And we kind of came across, I mean, there was a walkout, if you remember that, of employees leaving the company and saying, like, we don't like how we're handling this. And so, yeah, there's a good amount of people that don't agree with everything. I mean, it's hard to get that many people to agree on something all at once. So, it's led to a lot of kind of opportunities for us to talk to people.
Right. Now, before we get further into this report, I got to ask you up front, because this was one of my favorite things about the report. Can you tell me about the cover page of the report?
So for those that haven't read the story yet, there's a cover image. We actually reproduced the report because what happened is when we published the first story, Facebook ended up limiting who could read it internally. And so we thought that was an opportunity for us to actually publish the full story. So we ended up like typing out the whole thing so that more people could see it. Cause like, I mean, they're hiding it, you know?
Right.
And so one of the things we couldn't reproduce was the images. Like some of them were, there were graphics that were pretty hard stuff. There was other stuff that had like licensed images and we didn't want to get into copyright issues. But the cover image of the report is a burning U.S. Capitol building. It's like a kind of cartoon drawing of a burning U.S. Capitol building. And they took some cartoon of a corgi dressed as a firefighter. And I think the corgi was taken from some cartoonist. I don't know if they had the license to do that, but you know how you kind of just make memes. And the funny thing with, I mean, the Capitol building drawing was taken from a Vaz, which is this kind of anti-Facebook group who had done their own report. Right. So they took it from a Vaz and then like, because I was an anti-Facebook, they put the cartoon on it just to make it look like, I mean, you know, read that how you will. But yeah, it's a weird looking thing. When I saw that, I was kind of just started cracking up. But,
right. Avaz yeah. should be happy to know that there are people in Facebook who clearly read their work and know what they're,
yeah,
they're covering. So what does this report look at in terms of, I mean, it starts with Stop the Steal, I'm assuming, which is the movement that came about. Well, that movement started even before the election, but I guess it really obviously kicked off after Trump lost in November, because obviously you get all that preparation ready to go before the election, but you're not going to really pull the trigger on, you know, unleashing all your conspiracy theories and misinformation about how Trump lost really before he loses.
Right. So I think what people should know is that Facebook has all these internal tools that they developed. Like, it's not that they don't track things like hate speech and conspiracy theories and violence and incitement, but they actually have tools that track it. And it sometimes when it comes to Facebook, like there's not like a lack of signal. It's more a lack of acting and a lack of policy that goes in place. And so this report goes into things like comparing Stop the Steal groups with like all political groups. And you can see, like, I'm looking at the report right now, but like they have this thing for like how many white supremacist terms are in the group. And like, does it have at least 5 white supremacist terms? And 4.1% of Stop the Steal groups had 5 white supremacist terms compared to 0.13% of all political groups, you know? And so you can like see these, like this like clear comparison here. One thing that really stood out to me, they have this thing called violence and incitement, this metric called violence and incitement. And of Stop the Steal groups, 42.7% had at least 5 violence and incitement terms. Whereas most political groups, 0.89%, or about 0.89% of political groups had like 5 of those terms. And so you can see how radical, you know, these Stop the Steal groups were, how much they were pushing people towards conspiracy theory and hate and racial slurs. And it's really telling. And so I think their kind of conclusion here is, we were seeing this happening in real time. We were aware of the original Stop the Steal group, which I think formulated on the night of the election, but we just didn't have the ability to action on it. We didn't take the right approach. And you read this report and it's kind of damning for some of the internal teams at Facebook.
Right. Now, it seems like the report focuses on Facebook groups. Does that seem to be where all of this really took place? It doesn't really seem to cover much about, you know, pages or profiles, like personal profiles. It seems like it's fairly based within Facebook groups.
It's Facebook groups, because I believe the original Patriot Party, or sorry, the original Stop the Steal was the thing that was growing really quickly. That was a group. And so when they actioned on it, what they said is like, we did action on it, but we didn't recognize it as a movement. And so when we took out the original group, which grew up to be like have hundreds of thousands of members in a very short amount of time, it splintered into all these other groups. And so the report looks at how that splintering happened, what happened in those groups after the fact. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it was mainly these groups that they're paying attention to.
Right. I feel like, you know, we should talk a little bit about Facebook groups for people who really aren't familiar. It's a feature that Facebook has seemed to really focus on in recent years. When I say recent years, I don't mean like one or two, like, you know, the past like 5 years or so, they seem to really have focused on Facebook groups. And I'll admit too, as someone who wasn't much of a Facebook user, I found a few good Facebook groups, and that's sort of really the only reason I use Facebook anymore. It's not to, you know, really keep up with friends who I don't really talk to anymore, because all the friends I currently talk to are on other platforms. And I don't really, you know, go to business pages on there to like content that like Pepsi is putting out there or something. Facebook groups really is like the feature that I think is what is keeping at least a certain subset of Facebook users on the platform. And what's so good about that feature, I think, is also one of the things that is why it's being used for nefarious reasons. You know, Facebook groups is a good way to find people all over Facebook who have interest in one specific thing, and you're able to all talk about that one specific thing in that group without, you know, the news feed garbage that comes across your feed, people who you don't really have any interest in or topics you don't have any interest in getting in there. You know, Facebook groups is like, imagine everyone who has an interest in this topic is in this group, and they're having like interesting, good discussion about it. Unfortunately, when that discussion is about how to overthrow the election results and put the former president who loses the election into office, you get a bunch of people who plan pretty bad things.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, like, you're right that Facebook has done like a big marketing push to put people like to focus more on groups, and I think it's multiple reasons for that. One, like, Facebook overall sees like a decrease in engagement across the platform, and they're trying to figure out how to get more people to use the app and the site. And like, yeah, I mean, what better way to kind of center people on one thing? Like, you can talk about, I don't know, Magic the Gathering groups or soccer groups or Stop the Steal groups, you know, and that's something that they, I mean, I remember going, I used to live in San Francisco, and like going to like the BART station, and there would be huge groups of like, or ads for these groups, you know, like Facebook really did a big push to focus on group use. And I guess we're starting to reckon with some of that now, you know. And that being said, like, we're only talking about public groups, I think, in this report. Like, there's so many more private groups that just don't even see the light of day. I mean, they're private for a reason. And who knows kind of the activity that's going on in there.
Right. And the interesting thing about that I think people need to know is that there's an option on Facebook where it's not just like, you know, there's public groups and private groups, and you could search for them, see them, pull them up. And if it's a private group, you just like request to join. There's an option on Facebook where your private Facebook group is completely hidden. Like, you can't even search for it. Someone has to specifically invite you to that group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Closed groups.
So, you know, it's even more difficult for someone, you know, imagine someone starts this group, invites all their friends of some extremist group in there, and it's not like researchers or anyone else can see it. Although Facebook, I'm assuming, has the ability to look in those groups.
They do, yeah. And Mark Zuckerberg a couple years ago made this point of like, Facebook used to be like the town square, right? And they built all the products to make it like the town square, and this was what newsfeed was, and you saw everything from friends and family and old high school classmates and whatever. But these groups are now kind of the living room, if you will, your private living room where you have private discussions and you're not wanting to broadcast to the rest of the world, kind of thing. And so they're trying to figure out ways to kind of own both sets of conversations, I guess. And lo and behold, I mean, in those closed rooms, you can say some awful things, you know, without the people seeing, you know, without the private or without the public seeing.
Right. Now, do you know what the Facebook like executives and higher ups, what their reaction was to this report? Because I recall that in like the aftermath of January 6th, when that pro-Trump group stormed the Capitol, incited by a lot of these conspiracies and misinformation passed around in these Stop the Steal groups. And I'm sure before I get to that question, does Facebook know if there was an overlap between people who went? Like, do they know, like, has there been any studies or look at, you know, people who were arrested and if they were in these groups?
Not within this report. I'm not sure if Facebook has studied that. There's very few individuals to mention in this. The couple individuals that are mentioned in the report, which I thought was very interesting, are Ali Alexander and the Kremer, mother and daughter, right? The people that organize, Stop the Steal. So the report goes into like how we track them offline and how their offline activity kind of mixed with their online activity. And you could see them like, I thought that was really interesting, tracking their offline behavior and how it related to how they acted and how they built up these groups. But no, there's not really kind of other individuals that they look at with this report.
Right. So do we know the reaction from Facebook execs? Because I remember in the days after, even to not too long ago, I remember I remember Parler, the right wing social network, was really upset that, you know, Facebook was sort of throwing them under the bus, and they were arguing how you know, way more of this information came from Facebook. Now, obviously, Facebook is a lot bigger, so yes, more would come from it. You know, the proportion isn't really makes sense. It's like comparing apples and oranges. But at the same time, you know, Facebook sort of was like, no, we didn't have any influence on this. This is nothing to do with us. You saw what was going on Parler. That's where it was all coming from.
I don't know how leaders reacted to this report specifically. Like, I don't even know if someone like a Mark Zuckerberg or a Sheryl Sandberg even saw this. Sheryl Sandberg is, of course, the person that said those kind of infamous comments that the stuff happened on other platforms, not ours. And but a Facebook VP was in front of Congress this week, Monica Bickert, who kind of leads some policy operations. She was asking about the report, and so, or at least kind of parts of the report. So I'm sure they're aware of it. I don't know if they're going to come out and say anything about it. It doesn't make them look great. So yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There was a completely separate from the Stop the Steal. There was that Disinformation Dozen report of the 12 biggest anti-vaxxers on social media, and this came out like last month. And that same executive, Bickert, was asked at that hearing about those 12 people, and she was like, you know, we looked at this and we removed the violators. And then the organization that put out that report actually had reached out to me because I had covered it initially and said, you know, 10 of the 12 people are still on Facebook. So
yeah.
So that's pretty, you know. So now here's my thing. Does the report get to how these groups became so big? Because within this whole debate of, you know, censorship and free speech on these social media platforms, now obviously these social media platforms have the right to allow whatever they want because they own the platforms. These are private companies. But in my estimation, like, it's not so much like the actual content. Like, if there was a platform that wanted to allow anything goes, they probably wouldn't have that much of an issue for legal speech, even if it's like, you know, over the top or hate speech, if they didn't engage with what so many social media platforms do today, and that is they put their thumb on the scale. They promote content that receives high engagement. They push certain groups because they realize that, oh, there's a lot of people in here. They spend a lot of time on Facebook. You know, this must be where everyone wants to go. Let's push more people who watch like conservative, like, you know, if they interact with conservative content, we got to push them to this group that's rising in the charts because then they'll spend more time on here. If they didn't do that type of stuff, I feel like the problems would not be as big as they are. Do we know how these groups, like, did they look at that? Like, what if Facebook did anything?
So yeah, there's groups? There's a part in the story, or sorry, in the report that doesn't get group recommendations, which is a whole nother issue. But the main way that this thing spread was these super inviters. So there were a small percentage of people that were inviting a large chunk of the other people to the group. And the report termed them super inviters. So I think I'm looking at a report right now, but 30% of invites to Stop the Steal groups came from 0.3% of inviters. So like a very small minority of people were just kind of click monkeys, basically finding people in other groups, so kind of pro-Trump groups, groups that kind of expressed already like issues with the election, and they were inviting them to this group to bring them over. And so those super inviters had, I think, 500 invites each or something like that. And they were really maxing out here with who they were sending this to. And they're just kind of trying to build this thing as quickly as possible. And so the report does track that. And I thought it was really fascinating to see.
Right. And Facebook doesn't have anything. It seems like so many of these platforms have something that limits how many people you can invite to a group or whatever. Facebook doesn't have anything like that installed?
So the report goes into this, like, they saw this happening and they tried to insert like circuit breakers, you know, and they said by the time they got around to kind of getting, I guess, barriers in place, the group had gotten to a point where it was kind of self-subsisting, you know, and people were joining it on their own. But yeah, you would think that a company that was kind of ramping up for this very thing would have those tools, and maybe they did and they didn't act on them, but it's kind of damning that their own report is kind of throwing themselves on them. They're throwing other teams under the bus, but yeah, it's not a good look.
Right. Right. And when it comes to those splinter groups, once the original Stop the Steal group spread, mm-hmm. how did those groups grow? Did they look much into that?
Yeah. I mean, this whole report is on those groups. And so, anything they termed kind of Stop the Steal was captured in this report. And yeah, like kind of like a Hydra, you know, like cutting off one head of this massive group led to multiple Stop the Steal groups coming up. And even when they said they would action against them, we reported at the time that if you just literally search the term Stop the Steal, these other groups would show these groups, even when they had prohibited, you know, the term from being used on Facebook. And so it kind of shows the scale at which things can happen at Facebook and how even when they make a rule, they have a hard time enforcing it.
Right. Now, what were some of the things that this Facebook report suggested they do in the future? Because I feel like, you know, we've heard so much of this throughout the years, you know, in terms of like, you know, for example, after Cambridge Analytica, Facebook said, "Oh, you know, we recommend we do this, this, and this, and we'll do that." And it seems like every time they do that, there's something they fail to see to do. So, what are we looking at this time?
So now, I mean, you look at the conclusions of the report, which I'm going through right now, but the idea that they need to be able to, like, determine if something is a movement quicker, you know, they actioned against the original Stop the Steal group, but they didn't declare that a movement until much later, you know, that, you know, like they could action against individual ones, but in terms of a blanket ban or blanket action against all things term Stop the Steal, that didn't come till much, much later. And so they're saying we need to be able to act quicker when we see that there's these movements and that they're evolving. We need to have the tools and the policies in place to do that. One of the big things that came out of this also was, like, Facebook has a lot of rules around coordinated inauthentic behavior. This comes out of the 2016 election when you have Russian trolls and Russian disinformation users kind of spreading coordinated inauthentic posts, you know. But these were actually real people making decisions to engage with Stop the Steal. And so the report's authors say, like, we have little policy around coordinated authentic harm, and we need to look at this, which is kind of strange, too, because Facebook spent months before the election, executives like Mark Zuckerberg spent months before the election talking about how there could be delegitimization from people like Donald Trump, you know? And so they're looking at now policies for authentic, coordinated authentic harm. And that was one of the bigger conclusions. And then they talk about, like, other interventions and other things that they could bring into this, other barriers they could bring into place to stop stuff like this from, like, growing into a wildfire like it did.
Right. It's always amazing to me how, because I've come across this so many times where Facebook, first of all, publishes, they usually publish when they remove big networks for coordinated inauthentic behavior. And for people who don't know what that is, that's basically when they find that a page or a number of pages or profiles are using bots or fake accounts to help promote or push or juice the numbers on certain content or pages. And they really right. like seem to stamp those things down. And I mean, I get it. It helps push things to make them look like they're more popular, which then of course could lead real people into thinking, oh, this is an actual thing, and then it actually does become popular. But they always seem to just ignore the fact that there are people on the platform using it, real people on the platform using it for nefarious reasons, and they can do those same things, which is obviously a much bigger problem than a bunch of fake accounts doing those things.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to see how that happens, right? Think of like, I don't know, like, sports fans, you know, they get mad at like a one player, you know, and they like are like, let's go like heckle another player, you know. It's like, it's just sometimes that shit happens on Facebook, you know. Right. And like, it's kind of fascinating to me that they wouldn't think that this could happen to like undermine an election, which they thought was going to happen for months, you know, in the case that Trump lost, you know. Right. But I don't work there, so I don't make the decisions.
Now, the report has that, I wish you did, that report, the report on the front page of the report, which you described, has that picture, that cartoon of the burning Capitol building. Now, the report obviously focuses mostly mm-hmm. on Stop the Steal, and obviously it does it with the storming of the Capitol in the background. But does the report actually lay blame at Facebook's feet for what eventually led to the storming of the Capitol? Like, does it actually say, like, the inaction we took on the platform? Or this, not exactly this, obviously, but does it give them some sort of responsibility for what ended up happening on January 6th?
In, like, the nicest way possible, it says that. You know, I can read it right now. I'll read a passage of it, but it says, hindsight is 2020. At the time, it was very difficult to know whether what we were seeing was a coordinated effort to delegitimize the election, or whether it was protected free expression by users who were afraid and confused and deserved our empathy. But hindsight being 2020 makes it all the more important to look back to learn what we can about the growth of the election delegitimizing movements that grew, spread conspiracy, and helped incite the Capitol insurrection. I mean, that is, and where did that happen? It was on Facebook. So, I mean, that's the whole point of this report. So, yeah, it's not a great kind of look.
Right. It's weird to me that they even word it that way, because it could have been seen, because we saw it happen on Facebook with a number of adjacent movements. Like, QAnon was a real problem on Facebook before they decided to stamp it out years after. They had already built up a huge following on there. The Boogaloo Boys, who were on there for at least a year or two before they also in 2020 blew up and became a mainstream movement. You know, that also was something that, you know, it's not that Facebook decided to pull the trigger to take some sort of action on in 2020. It's not like these sorts of movements were unheard of. In fact, I mean, obviously the Capitol gets a lot of attention, but in many ways, like, I actually think, like, you know, and QAnon obviously played a role at the Capitol, but the broad QAnon movement, and even in some ways the Boogaloo Boy movement, much more harmful than the Stop the Steal movement, because Stop the Steal movement has a short lifespan, you know? QAnon and Boogaloos, mm-hmm. they're still going on.
And if you remember that action that was taken, it happened over the summer, where they kind of actioned against militias and QAnon. They added them as well in like one action, and they like blanket banned them all, you know. But we've reported like that Facebook has been watching this stuff for years. In fact, we had the departure note of this data scientist that was in a separate story of ours, where they kind of laid into the company for not actioning on QAnon earlier. That person kind of laid out how the company had been tracking it for years. They had seen this stuff happening. They had seen the overlap between things like QAnon and anti-vax, and that there was just no buy-in from people in the higher echelons of the company to make decisions to kind of remove this stuff until it grew to a pretty massive movement, you know?
Right. Was that, are you talking about Sophie Zhang?
Sophie Zhang was a different data scientist, but we had, I can send you the link so you can put it in the show notes if you want, but there's another story that details kind of the departure note of someone who specifically studied QAnon and left kind of in a huff, kind of angry at the company for how they handled it.
Right. All right, that'd be great. Yeah, and also for people who don't know, Sophie Zhang is that data scientist. We have multiple people leaving Facebook for this reason. I think her report actually focused on how Facebook was ignoring all of this stuff that was going on when it came to international politics, like all these bot accounts and fake accounts trying to push narratives in, like, you know, Guatemala and other
international. It was Honduras and Azerbaijan. Yeah. And we broke that story, that report as well, or sorry, her note as well. But the idea that she was the only one kind of looking at this stuff, and even though she found this coordinated inauthentic behavior, which we talked about authentic behavior earlier, but inauthentic behavior, so someone controlling dozens of pages or hundreds of pages, you know, of fake people, you know, or fake businesses or whatever. She would have this research and no one would act on it, or it would take a long time for someone to act on it. And I mean, that has consequences and repercussions in places where, I guess elections are won and lost and this stuff. I mean, you know, people are deeply affected by like this. And if there's only one person who is motivated looking at this and no one else is kind of willing to make a decision, awful things can happen.
Right.
And that was kind of her message.
Right. Now, what does Facebook see their role as here? Like, it seems like they are conflicted. And that seems to be the result. And what we see is what we're seeing. The result is what we're seeing now, where I don't think the company has really decided what their role in all this is. Like, they do bring out these policies and platform changes to deal with this stuff, but it all seems so reactionary to something that occurs, and they do this to basically, you know, is it like a PR move to like put out the fire? I think the biggest issue is that, or at least in terms of why they're so late to the game on so many of these things, because they're not quite sure where they want, what, like, where they stand on this, what they want to do when they come across something like this.
I think this is a question for them. You should have someone on your on the stream to talk about it. But yeah, I think this is a good, you mentioned PR kind of response. Actually, one of the big points of Sophie's memo and of other people pointed this out, but the only way to kind of get Facebook to act on something is for there to be a big public fiasco about it. They respond well to PR crises. And there is like an internal strategy among employees to leak stuff or put stuff on a workplace, which is their internal kind of message board, so that it leaks to reporters. So that it gets attention, so that people at the higher up parts of the company do come across this and do take action. And I don't think to start a PR crisis for you to do the right thing or for your company to do the right thing is probably not the right way to run a corporation. But what do I know?
Right. What do you know, Ryan?
I know nothing. Yeah.
So, I guess to wrap it up here, do we have a reaction from Facebook employees after Facebook restricted access to this internal report? Like, have they reacted to that?
I've gotten some kind of reaction. So in response to this report, them taking it down, Facebook PR told me that it was the authors that limited restriction to who could read it. And one of the commenters after that second story came out, which had the full report, was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I saw this report across multiple groups. It was meant to be read widely. It doesn't make sense that they would say it was taken down because it wasn't meant to be read by a large group of people. So, I mean, there's some kind of, I guess, dissonance between what PR is saying and how employees are reacting, but I don't think that's anything new.
Right. I can't recall if I asked you actually already. Sorry if you mentioned it. Or it would have been earlier in the show. What team was involved with this report specifically?
It was a task force. So I think probably multiple people across different teams, but it was kind of I think it was the disaggregating harms task force, or I have to get the exact name. I'm not even sure if it's in the disaggregating networks task force. Yeah. I guess it's like a group of people that are put together to study this thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I was just wondering if I'm actually interested in the fact that they have these. I mean, it's not surprising that they have internal tools that look at this stuff, but the fact that they're actually like tracking, you know, how many times certain words and terminologies are mentioned inside groups. That's like, you know, even if they wanted some sort of hands-off approach, you would think they would, if they were interested in actually combating this stuff without actually them having to be the person pulling the strings to block certain things or take down certain things, they would make at least some of that sort of material open to people who research this stuff outside the company. You know, it's you know, again, another thing where I think they're confused as to what their role is here.
Yeah, I think there's no lack of tools and dashboards in the company that track stuff. We had another story a couple months ago about this thing called the Hatebait dashboard, which is actually interesting. So it tracked the amount of hateful comments on pages. And the leaders of that were always like Breitbart and Daily Caller and Daily Wire and like a lot of right and far right places, Fox News, whose users would generate the most hateful comments. And so there's like all these tools within Facebook that people are using to track this stuff. But again, they are tracking it, but it comes down to like, are policies made against it? Do things put in place to prevent it? And that's kind of where that rubber meets the road, that there is kind of a lack of action.
Right. Ryan Mack, senior technology reporter at BuzzFeed News. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. The links to your pieces are in the description for the YouTube feed and on the Patreon page. Why don't you tell people where they could follow your work and where they could follow you online?
Sure. I'm constantly on Twitter, which is an issue, but I'm at rmack18. If anyone wants to follow me there, follow BuzzFeed News. And if you like us enough, think about becoming a member and supporting our work.
All right, Ryan. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thanks, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining the show. And before we go, first of all, before we go, let me explain to people who don't know here that wait one second. All right. Well, first of all, I have a like I mentioned at the top of the show, a new setup here. Getting used to it. I think the stream is nicer, and everything is running smoother. And I think people who tuned in last night, I did a live stream of Joe Biden's speech to Congress, and that was a smooth ride. And I want to thank the patrons for basically funding this new setup I have here. I couldn't have done it without them. Thanks to those patrons, I was able to upgrade my equipment. And I would like to thank specifically my newest patrons. The people who joined the Patreon since the last episode last Thursday of this show, Marty J and Ernest B, thank you so much for becoming patrons. As always, you could join this show at patreon.com/MattBinder if you can afford to do so. Obviously, I know times are tough. If you can't, totally understand. You could support this show by subscribing to the YouTube page at youtube.com/MattBinder, following the Twitch channel, twitch.tv/MattBinder, follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or wherever at MattBinder. Usually, if I'm not MattBinder somewhere, you could find me just by searching MattBinder. Also, doomedpod.com and doomedcast.com. Both will take you to the podcast page. It was always doomedpod.com. And for someone took doomedcast.com a long time ago when I was first naming the show. So I wasn't able to grab that one. And then the other day I was searching and I was like, oh, it's available now. So I grabbed Doomed Cast. I actually like how Doomed Cast sounds better. I think Doomed Cast sounds better. I like how it sounds more than how Doomed Pod sounds. Don't know what was going on there. Don't know. It's hot in here, I guess. I got these lights on me. I'm in this little closet that you all know is my studio. I'm wearing this hoodie. Why am I wearing this hoodie, you ask? Because I like wearing hoodies. I really should take it off. But then the people who joined the Biden live stream last night will see that I didn't change my shirt from yesterday. So that's also why I'm wearing the hoodie. But I guess it's not really any, it's not surprising, folks, to those of you who know me, that I'm a dirty, dirty boy. Anyway, we're going to go to the second half of the show. Well, before we do that, though, by the way, I take calls in the second half. Pull up your Skype now. Go into Doomed and type in Doomed Live, and you can call into the show. People were begging to call into the show last night during the Biden live stream. It went long because I did Biden, then I did Bowman's Progressive Response, and then Scott's Republican Response. So it was like over 2 hours, and I was just like a little bit exhausted. But we're only about, 50 minutes into the show now? So I'm raring to go for another hour plus. And you all know me, I end up going like 3 hours sometimes because I'm crazy. We'll take calls right away. Again, pull up Skype, Doomed Live, search it, you'll find it, and call. I'll set that up when I take that quick break in between so you could call then. Also, Super Chats. If you're in the YouTube channel, drop a Super Chat. And you can, what was I going to say? And you can give me a one-off donation, and I'll read your comment or question for sure. I definitely do not miss the Super Chats. I used to be able to, read all your questions in the chat, but too many people watch this show now. I just can't keep up. What else can I do? This is one more request from you guys. I ask you of so much, don't I? Just like a handful, I think it's like three or four reviews on iTunes away from the nice round number of 300 iTunes reviews. If you haven't already left a review on iTunes, I can't believe I'm calling it iTunes. It's Apple Podcasts now. Go over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. It really does help the show get discovered. I see growth spurts when it comes to the downloads of the show when more people leave reviews, because it goes up in the charts on Apple Podcasts. Also, this show is available not only on Apple Podcasts, but on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'm going to ask you another request. If you've already left an Apple Podcast review, then go over to Spotify, search for Doomed with Matt Binder. And if you can, I don't know if they do reviews there, but you can follow or subscribe to the show free. I'm not asking for money there either yet. I will roll it out when they roll out the paid subscriptions. But I'm pretty sure it works the same way, where if it has a lot of followers, they push it up in whatever rankings they have on Spotify. I'm not thinking I'm going to get the number one podcast on there, or even in the top 50 or 100. But people browse through that stuff, and I think, I believe on Apple Podcasts, I am right outside of the top 100 news commentary podcasts. And on that chart, it's the Ben Shapiro's and the Tim Pool's of the world. So, I'm not that far out of the charts there. Mr. Saxokeet says, why Skype, not Discord? Well, because I haven't set up the Discord yet to do that. I'm basically using a platform. My app that I use to stream, it's called Ecamm Live. And what's great about that is that it has a Skype functionality built in. And basically, you call me and I press a single button inside Ecamm Live, and that brings in the audio and video feed. No fooling around with sources and system audio. It's just a click of a button and I pull you into Skype. And I could pull your Skype into the feed. I know a lot of people like Discord. I will get a solution to that. You know, I'll have to pull it in, but I'll work out some sort of smooth process to do that. But for today's show, at least, we're still doing the Skype. So, ladies and gentlemen, give me a minute or two to just grab a drink. And we will... Oh, wait, one more thing I wanted to say, actually. Really funny thing about the Biden live stream last night. So I did the live stream, went to bed. Everything was fine, went on to sleep, woke up. And as you know, I multicast it simultaneously on multiple platforms via Restream. So this show is live on YouTube, Twitch, Periscope/Twitter, and Facebook at the same time. Smallest audience there is probably Facebook. I don't really pay much attention to my Facebook page there, but it's got a couple hundred people on there and a few people watch it on there. All of a sudden, I wake up and CBS is claiming to own the Biden speech. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but speeches like that, anything to take place on the floor of the Congress, presidential speeches like that, those are all public domain. You know, channel has ownership over that. That's why those speeches are also multicast on all the different networks and cable news channels and on C-SPAN and PBS, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So CBS claimed it. And what happened there most likely, almost for sure, is that their automated content system basically saw that they had uploaded it and assumed they owned it. And so I got a copyright strike, not a strike, but I got a copyright removal for the video. And so, and I should also mention, I wasn't using the CBS feed either. I was using a feed that I had the ability to use, C-SPAN, the C-SPAN feed. So CBS was claiming ownership over it. So I had to file a dispute. And a couple hours later, I guess a human at CBS looked over the dispute and released it, said, he's right, we don't own it. I mean, that's a problem in and of itself. These major companies are claiming copyright on content they do not own due to various flaws in the system. And they claim ownership over it for hours. And during this time, these platforms siphon that money to those companies who claim, like the revenue from ads to those companies who claim ownership over them. Now, I am not going to go out there and act like some right-wing grifter and say I lost out on money and start a GoFundMe become rich and famous. This is why my show is small and I'm not blowing up and all over the place because I am a terrible marketer because I should be doing that stuff. But I can't bring myself to being disingenuous. I can assure you I've lost no revenue on Facebook. First of all, I don't even make any revenue on Facebook. So I can assure you I lost nothing from CBS doing that. But there are people who do lose out from companies doing that. And also, it's the point of the matter. So on top of that, and here's the real kicker. So CBS releases it. And a few hours pass. I want to say maybe like 2 or 3 hours pass. And then I get another copyright claim on Facebook. Same video. It's the Biden live stream from last night. Same footage. Public domain speech from the president of the United States. And get this, ready? It wasn't like CBS's automated system accidentally grabbing it again. It was a whole new company. That footage that hours earlier CBS claimed to own, Disney was now claiming ownership of that footage. Just incredible. Just incredible. Just it's stunning that like it's like a joke, the automated system that these platforms have put out for these major media companies to just claim ownership over whatever they want to without any proof necessary. Like the idea that one company would do it is ridiculous enough in its own. But then the fact that you go through the dispute, the company, one major conglomerate agrees, yeah, we messed up. It's not ours. And my argument, too, was that, A, it's public domain footage, and then, B, my use of it is falls under fair use because I was providing commentary to it, and it's political commentary, so it falls under, like, educational purposes. Obviously, it was copyrighted material. I probably wouldn't fly using everything, but if it was copyrighted material, I wouldn't use the whole speech. I would have only used clips and portions. The fact of it being public domain footage was why I used the whole live Biden speech. So crazy enough that one company did it, but then for that same footage to be claimed again by a completely different company who also doesn't own it. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I can tell you, though, that Disney is quicker at releasing footage that they messed up on. It took CBS a few hours. Disney pretty much agreed that they messed up and they didn't own rights to that footage in like minutes. I guess more people working at Disney than CBS. I don't know. Yeah. My point of telling you that story is that I should probably do an episode on it. The content ID system is something's got to change. All right, folks, give me a minute. We will go to the second half of the show. Once again, patreon.com/MattBinder to support this show. I hate doing this, but I'm going to do it really quick. We're really close to like breaking through to some like, higher tiers on Patreon. I mean, we've been growing at a really nice pace. And over these past like week or so, the growth has sort of stalled a bit, which is, a little bit disheartening, but it happens. But if you could help, kickstart the next wave of Patreon growth by becoming a subscriber at patreon.com/MattBinder. That'd be great. And I'm going to be doing some patron exclusive stuff. You get into the Discord. I fixed the Discord issue. Well, I didn't fix the Discord issue, but I'm sending out the invites manually. We got a whole bunch of new Discord members. I've been in there a bit more than usual. And I will roll out Discord stuff too, my friends who want to call in via Discord. I promise you. So we'll do that. I will be doing, streams just for patrons shortly, not the same type of stuff as you see here, but, streams where you can all join in. It'll be like a Zoom chat and we'll like have a full blown, like discussion, like a back and forth, not like you having to call in, like everyone will be there and we could all just chatter about whatever you want. Well, the show, my time at the Majority Report, current events, politics, personal stuff. It'll be fun. And it'll be for patrons only. So until then, though, see all the freebie listeners next time. All the rest of you, stick around. We will be, and if you're watching on the live stream, you could stick around too. I won't cut out the live stream watchers. You guys can watch this half too. But until next time, for everybody else, see you all next time on Doomed.